Kitty shrugged. I don't know. My first thought was that maybe they'd found the spare keys in Mickey's office. Her pulse speeded as he dropped his hands and leaned forward in his seat, his dark blue gaze calling heat into her cheeks. I've asked Mickey to order a proper key cabinet. The question is, why did someone take the key to your room? And then, having carefully searched your room, place the key back on its hook in Mickey's office? The implications of his questions hit her like a bucket of ice water. You think they deliberately chose my room? It wasn't a random thing. She'd been so stupid, of course it couldn't have been random, if whoever it was had gone to that much trouble. This was even worse than she'd imagined. You've had nothing go missing from other guests? No comments or questions to suggest their possessions have been disturbed? No, but it could just have been someone taking a random key and trying their luck. My room is quite isolated. Her voice faltered. That wasn't quite true anymore. Matt's room was only separated from hers by a couple of storage closets. The key had also been replaced, and why would a thief only try one key or leave her few bits of jewellery and her mother's picture frame? If they wanted money, then even those things would have provided a few shillings. The gleam in his eyes told her he didn't believe the theory of a random thief any more than she did. She suspected that he also knew her feelings about sharing her floor with him, which perhaps was somewhat ungrateful as he'd saved her life. Matt knew it was risky alerting Kitty to the potential threat to her safety, especially when her grandmother had asked for his discretion. In his view, however, when someone had attempted to push Kitty under a truck, that had changed the rules. She had to be made aware that there was a potential threat, without alarming her unnecessarily or giving away too much. It had been his idea to secure accommodation on the same floor as Kitty. Her self-imposed isolation at the top of the hotel bothered him. Something else bothering him was the niggling feeling that Kitty's grandmother hadn't been entirely frank with him about her suspicions of who might be behind the threats. She had mentioned Eloed, Kitty's mother, but had remained cagey on the subject of Kitty's father. "What about any of the current hotel residents?" he asked. Kitty blinked. "I'm not sure what you mean." Matt studied her face. "Is there anyone who you think may be responsible? Anyone who makes you feel uneasy at all for any reason?" Confusion clouded her grey-blue eyes. "At this time of year, a lot of our guests are regulars who travel with a touring motor coach company or via the train. They come every spring and autumn before the main rush and the prices rise. Our main visitor season starts soon, though, when Miss Delaware launches our summer entertainment. We have a few private guests, and again, some of them are regulars. They have business locally and stay with us several times throughout the year."
"So there isn't anyone that you can think of who might be worth keeping an eye on?"
Kitty caught her lower lip between her teeth. She hesitated for a moment before speaking. "There is this one man. I just bumped into him, actually, outside the front entrance. He hasn't done or said anything that makes me think there's anything wrong, but..."
"But?"
Matt asked when she hesitated again. "He makes me feel uncomfortable, and I don't know why. He has an unusual accent, although he registered with an English name and address. I suppose he could be ex-colonial." Matt could tell from the delicate pink flush shading her cheeks and the scrunching of her shoulders that the conversation made Kitty feel awkward.
"I know it's not nice to think that one of your guests might be responsible, but I have to look at the possibilities. That's why your grandmother employed me. Tell me which guest you mean."
Kitty sighed and pulled out the visitor's register. In a few seconds, she beckoned Matt to come around to her side of the desk and view the page.
This is the man. Mr. Brian Smith from Essex, room 21 on the second floor. He stood behind her to peer at the details. Can you make me a copy of the register entry? He was close enough to smell the fresh soapy scent on her skin and to notice the tiny mole below her earlobe. Matt forced his attention back to the register and tried not to think about his proximity to Kitty or why she ruffled his senses so much. He hadn't thought about a woman this way for a long time, not since Edith. He straightened and took a tiny step back, only to bang his heel against the office wall. Smith is not the most original choice for a surname, he commented. Maybe not, but it could be his real name. Kitty removed the top from her fountain pen and copied the details onto a fresh sheet of paper. Matt barely waited for her to finish blotting it before taking it from the desk. He knew she was right. Smith might well be the man's real name. It was one of the most common surnames in England. He moved away from the back of her desk to stand near the door. It was too disturbing to his peace of mind to spend much time alone with Kitty in a small space. Perhaps that was the problem. He disliked small spaces, something else that was a legacy of the war. What do you plan on doing with that? Kitty asked, looking at the copy of the register entry that he held. I'm going to do a little probing and see what I can find out. Kitty looked alarmed. Matt spoke quickly before she could change her mind and retrieve the information she'd given him. Don't worry, I'll be discreet. He didn't tell her that not all of his investigative methods were strictly legal. Some of his sources of information were definitely of the shadier kind, and somehow he didn't think Kitty would approve. He'll never know, and if he turns out to be on the level, then it'll put your mind at ease. If it makes you feel any better, remember that someone caused you to ruin a pair of stockings yesterday by pushing you in front of a coal truck. I can't help thinking this is all a bit of fuss over nothing. We have no real proof that anyone tried to shove me in front of that truck, and there might be some explanation for the things being moved in my room. Her eyes held an anguished plea for him to agree with her. We've already talked about this, Kitty. Your grandmother hired me to look after the security of the hotel. You've reported something unusual, and I have to get to the bottom of it. He wished he could be completely honest with her about the messages her grandmother had received, but he had given his word that he would say nothing. He was already starting to regret that promise. Kitty blew out a breath and slumped back in her chair as soon as Matt left the room. He was as bad as her grandmother for treating her like a child and not giving her the full picture, and she knew from her gut that he wasn't telling her everything. Although what on earth could be going on in a sleepy old-fashioned hotel like the Dolphin was beyond her comprehension. She stayed where she was for a moment, spinning herself gently from side to side in her wood and leather office chair. Matt wasn't the only person who could do some investigating. Maybe she ought to do some snooping herself, and her first port of call would be to try and find out a bit more about Mr. Matthew Bryant and why Grams had hired him. Kitty decided to leave the rest of the staff rotas until later. It wasn't as if she had any plans for the evening, so she could always finish them then. Instead, she opened her desk drawer and hunted around for the spare key to her grandmother's suite. It was time she went and did some research of her own. A sliver of guilt stilled her hand as she turned the key in the lock to her grandmother's suite. Perhaps she should leave well alone and go back to sorting out the paperwork in her office. She shook the thought away, squared her shoulders, and entered the suite. The salon seemed empty without her grandmother's small but formidable presence. Although her grandmother had done away with many of the frills and furbelows, the room still had a distinctive Edwardian look, with chintzy chairs and heavy drapes framing the windows. The ticking of the handsome silver gilt carriage clock on the mantelpiece appeared to reproach her presence. She locked the door behind her and crossed the room to the small rosewood writing bureau, where her grandmother kept all her private and business papers. Kitty slid the palm of her hand along the side of the bureau, feeling for a small notch in the wood. She pressed firmly, and a tiny hidden drawer slid silently open to reveal the spare key. Kitty took the key and closed the drawer before unlocking the front of the bureau. Inside the cabinet was a neat arrangement of drawers and pigeonholes where her grandmother stored her documents. Moving swiftly, Kitty began to sift through the paperwork, looking for Matt's contract or any correspondence he had had with Grams. She hated herself for snooping, but couldn't bring herself to stop. All her life, secrets had been kept from her. Secrets about her mother, her father, about her life before she came to the Dolphin, and now, it seemed, secrets about what was going on at the hotel and why Matt was really there. Nothing. There was nothing there. Frustrated, Kitty closed and secured the bureau before returning the key to its hiding place. She stood, ready to leave and return to her office, when she heard someone at the door. Before she had time to think things through, Kitty stepped silently across the salon and hid in her grandmother's bathroom, leaving the door slightly ajar to peer through the gap. Even as she moved, she berated herself for being stupid. She had every right to be in her grandmother's room. Regardless, her instinct told her that whoever else wanted to enter the suite had no right to be there, and Kitty intended to find out who it was and what they wanted. Chapter 5. She froze in place, wedged in a narrow space between the sink and the doorframe, as the intruder unlocked the door and entered the room. To her frustration, she discovered that her view through the gap between the door and frame was more limited than she'd hoped. She tried to control her breathing, her heart thumping in her chest as she heard the familiar sounds of drawers being opened and closed. It was hard to know what the burglar might be looking for. Kitty was certain that this wasn't some random break-in. Thank goodness she had relocked the bureau. From the sounds of papers being shuffled, items being moved, and the earlier systematic search of her own room, someone was looking for something they believed either she or her grandmother had. What that something could be, she had no idea. Cautiously, Kitty shifted her position, glad she had opted for her understated pale grey dress and navy cardigan that morning, instead of her favourite cherry red print. She tried to catch a glimpse of whoever was in the room, hoping she was inconspicuous in her hiding place. She toyed with the idea of bursting out and confronting whoever was out there. Only the terrifying memory of her life flashing before her when she'd almost been flattened by the lorry prevented her. Whoever the mystery burglar was, they could be dangerous. They had obviously gone to a lot of trouble to get hold of keys and to sneak around the rooms. The sound of footfall on the Turkish carpet caught her attention, and she held her breath as the intruder drew nearer to her hiding place behind the door. She released the air from her lungs slowly as he headed instead towards her grandmother's bedroom. The palms of her hands were sweaty with fear, and she rubbed them on the front of her skirt to dry them. What if he tried to get into the bathroom next? The intruder was a man, she was sure. The sounds of his breathing and a muffled curse when his search of the lounge had proved fruitless had told her that. She glanced around the bathroom. There was nowhere to hide, and a quick look along the marble countertop next to the sink didn't reveal anything useful that she could use as a weapon either. The sound of her grandmother's telephone ringing made her jump, and her heart rate leapt in momentary panic. She clutched at her blouse and held her breath, only to exhale slowly when the ringing stopped. Her knees trembled when she realized the telephone had rung once and stopped, then rung again immediately afterwards. The intruder had responded to the code and answered the call. Kitty strained to try and hear the conversation going on in the next room. Whoever had called him on the internal line had to be a staff member, as all external calls went through reception.
"Nothing. The place is empty. I've checked it all except the bureau. It was locked."
His voice sounded closer, and Kitty shrank back against the cold, white tiles of the bathroom wall.
"Yes, I looked there, I told you. No, nothing in the bedroom."
She hardly dared breathe. The man was right outside the bathroom door. Outside, in the corridor, she heard the distant rumble of the elevator. The intruder cursed.
"I have to go. The maids are coming."
A few seconds later, Kitty heard the door of her grandmother's suite click. She waited for a minute in case the man should return. Once she was certain the coast was clear, she stumbled into the lounge and sank down on the sofa. Her hands and legs trembled, and her thoughts were jumbled with fear and relief. She picked up the receiver and dialed the extension to reception. To her dismay, her voice wobbled slightly when the receptionist answered.
"Please ask Mr. Bryant to come up to my grandmother's suite. It's urgent."
She hoped it wasn't the receptionist who had rung earlier. She barely had time to replace the handset when Matt let himself into the suite.
"Kitty, what's happened? I was in the lobby when you rang down."
He was out of breath as he hurried straight to her side, his expression anxious. She managed to give him a brief report on what she'd seen and heard.
"Did you manage to see anything at all that could identify who the man might be?"
Kitty shook her head. She felt calmer now Matt was with her. For some reason, since her encounter with the lorry, she seemed to trust him instinctually.
"I couldn't see anything through the crack in the door. He sounded like an older man, though."
"Anything else you could tell from his voice?" Matt asked.
She frowned in concentration.
"I got the impression that he might be local. He had a very faint accent."
Matt rubbed his chin.
"He was clearly acting under orders from someone, whoever he might be."
"What on earth are they looking for, and why here?"
His question echoed her own thoughts. "It makes no sense."
"Would you recognize his voice again if you heard it?"
Kitty sucked in a breath.
"I don't know. I think so, but I can't be sure. He only spoke a few words."
"Is he a guest here?"
She had been trying to think if his voice had been familiar ever since Matt had joined her.
"I don't know. I don't think so. But who could have called him on the telephone? It has to be a staff member to know he was in here, and the internal telephone number.
There are only a few places within the hotel with a telephone extension. There is one in reception, my office, in the kitchen, my bedroom, Graham's suite, and the honeymoon suite." She knew most of the guests, and she was almost positive she would have known if she'd heard the intruder's voice before. It was more disturbing that someone she employed could be involved.
"Okay, I'll need to get a staff list from you, and we'll see if we can work out who it might be. It wasn't reception, as I was there and the phone wasn't used. The most likely extensions would be the kitchen or the honeymoon suite."
Matt sounded frustrated as he raked his hand through his hair, making the ends spike up like a disgruntled hedgehog.
"The kitchen is busy this time of day, so someone would notice the telephone being used. The honeymoon suite is empty, as Miss Delaware will be using it for her residency."
"Then a member of staff who knows that suite is vacant is the most likely option. One of the maids, perhaps?"
"Did Graham say anything to you about this before she left?"
Kitty wondered where the urge to smooth down Matt's hair had come from. She rested her hands in her lap and waited for his response. She was sure her grandmother must have had some inkling that something odd was going on. Why else would she have hired Matt? The story about thefts in town had never really sounded very convincing. He slumped back against the sofa, his eyes narrowing slightly as he studied her face. Kitty could almost hear the cogs turning in his mind as if he were weighing up how much he should tell her.
"Your grandmother gave me some strange notes she'd received."
His gaze was wary.
"I don't understand. What kind of notes? What did they say?"
Kitty frowned. The conversation had taken a surreal turn, and she began to feel as if she was starring in some cheap thriller. For answer, he dug into his pocket and pulled out a piece of paper.
"This is one of the letters. They all said much the same thing."
She scanned the note, struggling to take in what was happening.
"Give back what is not yours to keep. This is bizarre. How can anyone respond to this? Do the police know about these notes?"
"Yes. There doesn't seem to be enough for them to do anything. Cheap paper, common type, no distinguishing features, unsigned.
And your grandmother destroyed the envelopes. She says they were typed with a local postmark.
The police arranged extra patrols after your grandmother pulled a few strings with the chief constable, but that was all they could offer."
He noticed that Kitty didn't seem surprised that her grandmother had used her influence to get extra patrols.
"I don't understand. What on earth could Grams or I possibly have that would interest a criminal gang? I assume this must be the work of more than one person, given what I heard when I was in Grams's bathroom."
She stared at the paper in her hand as if she hoped it would tell her the answer.
"I'm not sure. I wondered if perhaps your grandmother's friends might have some ideas."
Kitty lifted her head to look at him. Her clear, grey-blue eyes met his gaze.
"I don't know. I suppose they might have. The gals, as Grams calls them, have been her friends for years. If anyone knows anything, I suppose they might."
Matt was satisfied from the frankness of Kitty's countenance that whatever lay behind the mystery, she wasn't privy to it.
"Is there any one of them she is especially close to? One she may have confided in more than the others?" he asked.
Kitty sighed.
"Mrs. Craven is probably the one who would know more than the others."
He picked up the hesitancy in her voice.
"But you don't like her?"
"I believe I have met her. She was the one wearing the dead animal?"
She laughed and shook her head, a stray tendril of her soft blonde hair falling onto her cheek.
"Yes, to the fox stole. And no, I don't like her particularly. She's an awful snob, and she always treats me as if I'm some kind of burden to Grams. She didn't like my mother either."
A rosy pink blush swept across her pale face.
Again there was the mention of Kitty's missing mother.
He remembered the awkward silence that had fallen before at his interview with her grandmother and her friends when Kitty's mother had been mentioned. Maybe she was the key to this mystery.
"Your grandmother mentioned your mother in connection with the letters."
"My mother? I suppose it could be someone being malicious, or trying some kind of con trick. There is still a reward for information."
"What about your father?"
A wry smile curved the corners of her mouth.
"My father had gone before my mother came back to the Dolphin with me. I haven't seen or heard from him since."
He had no reason to disbelieve her.
"Do you have a telephone number for Mrs. Craven?"
She recited the number and he added it to the list in his notebook.
"I think I'll call her and see if I can go and see her to ask a few questions."
"When Grams rings next, I'll see if there's anything else she can tell me."
Kitty hesitated.
"I don't want to worry her, though. She has enough on her plate with Livy, and although she may seem like a tough old bird, she isn't."
Her eyes held an unspoken plea,
I know. Just find out what you can without alarming her. I wasn't supposed to tell you any of this.
He couldn't help flashing Kitty a small smile, hoping to reassure her. She smiled back at him.
I'll be tactful.
He left Kitty to finish her afternoon's work. His mind was busy filing and sorting all the odd scraps of information. He doubted if Kitty would get much from her grandmother when she called. Although he was certain the old lady hadn't told him everything she knew, he wasn't sure if she had the whole picture. If she did know who was behind the threats and why, then she wouldn't have employed him. His brief hadn't merely been to protect Kitty, but to uncover the mystery. Mrs. Craven answered his call on the first ring, taking him by surprise.
Mrs. Craven, we met at the Dolphin Hotel the other day. Mrs. Treadwell employed me.
She interrupted him before he could get any further.
There is no need for you to beat about the bushes, Captain Bryant. I remember perfectly well who you are. What can I do for you?
Matt blinked and continued. I wondered if I might call on you and ask you a few questions. There have been some very strange things happening here at the hotel, and I'm concerned for Kitty's safety. He thought he heard Mrs. Craven snort.
You may call today at 4 o'clock. Although I doubt if I shall have anything to say which might be useful to you, please ring the bell, as it is my maid's afternoon off.
If you do think of something, anything at all concerning Kitty or her mother, it would help. Matt could see why Kitty didn't care for the woman.
I very much doubt if I can add much of use, and I'm sure most of the town could tell you about Kitty's mother.
The elderly woman remarked in a dry tone.
But I shall do my best.
Nice piece of work, Matt muttered as Mrs. Craven hung up, the decisive click of the receiver going down seeming to echo on the line. He glanced at the time on his wristwatch. He had less than 2 hours before he was due at Mrs. Craven's home. Not much time. Kitty looked up from her desk when he entered her office a little later in the afternoon.
How did you get on when you called Mrs. Craven? She asked.
I'm on my way to go and see her now. Do you have her address?
Kitty scribbled it down on a piece of paper and passed it to him.
Do you think she knows anything that could help?
Matt shrugged.
I'm not sure, but it's worth a try.
I suppose so.
Uncertainty showed in Kitty's eyes as she attempted a smile. I did a little bit of digging around earlier this afternoon. When I get back, can we meet? There are a few things I found that I'm not sure about. There were a lot of things he wasn't certain about. Every lead he followed up seemed to throw up more questions than it answered. Kitty nodded.
Of course. I'll be in the hotel. Just give me a call.
The shadows under her eyes had grown darker during the afternoon, and Matt wished he could take her away from the Dolphin and place her somewhere safe until the mystery had been solved. The impulse surprised him.
I'll see you later.
He headed out of the hotel to take the short walk through the town and up the hill to where Mrs. Craven lived, in one of the new houses that commanded a view of the river valley. He wished he could shake off the feeling of unease that seemed to grow with every step he took closer to Mrs. Craven's home. The same sense of unease he used to feel in the war zone, right before something bad would happen. And the same sense he'd had the night his wife and child had died. Chapter 6. The street was empty and seemingly devoid of life. The breeze, which usually cooled the air down by the waterside, was absent here, up on the hill. Mrs. Craven's house was at the end of a street filled with large middle-class houses, imposing in their isolated air of self-importance. The windows surveyed him blankly through diamond-leaded panes as he reached the foot of the drive. Matching stone tubs sat either side of the dark oak front door, scarlet tulips standing to attention, guarding the entrance. Matt sucked in a breath and straightened his shoulders before raising the polished brass door knocker. There was something about Mrs. Craven that reminded him of being called to the headmistress's office when he'd been at primary school. The staccato rat-a-tat-tat of the door knocker broke the eerie silence in the deserted street. Matt checked his wristwatch. He was 2 minutes early. The door remained resolutely closed. The prickly sense of unease that had dogged him all the way to the house intensified. Mrs. Craven was not the kind of woman who would break an appointment. He stepped back from the iron-studded front door. There were no signs of life from inside. A gate set in a wooden fence stood at the side of the house, which he guessed gave entry to the back garden. A quick glance up and down the street revealed no trace of anyone watching him. Moving swiftly, he headed for the gate. He expected to find it locked, but to his surprise, the wrought iron handle turned easily in his grasp. The prickling sense of danger at the nape of his neck intensified as he pushed the gate open a little way. "Mrs. Craven?" There was no reply. Tentatively, he pushed the gate open wider, granting him a view of the neatly kept rear garden. A blackbird chirped from a nearby flowering cherry tree, breaking the silence. At first glance, everything appeared in order. The lawn was a lush, pristine emerald green, mown and clipped to bowling green standards. Wallflowers stood in rows along the flower border. The only alien object in the peaceful scene was the crumpled mound of blue at the far end of the garden path. Matt sprinted forwards. Mrs. Craven lay in a small, still heap on the riven stone flags. Her eyes were closed and her lips pursed as if annoyed to find herself in such a position. A sticky puddle of blood oozed from her temple, staining the grey stone and emerald turf dark red. A trowel lay discarded in the flowerbed next to her gloved hand, along with a collection of mare's tail weeds. Matt dropped to his knees and felt the elderly woman's neck for a pulse. To his relief, there was a faint fluttering beneath his fingers. He scanned the garden quickly for any clue as to what had taken place. There was no sign of a weapon, no footprints or anything out of place. Her rings were still on her fingers and a gold watch on her wrist. Robbery wasn't the motive. The ambulance arrived at the same time as the police. Matt gave what details he could to both services as the ambulance staff prepared to take Mrs. Craven to the local cottage hospital. Whilst answering the policeman's questions, his mind whirred. Had the old woman simply had some kind of fit or fainted, causing her to bang her head on the path when she'd fallen? The timing was suspicious, and Mrs. Craven was not the kind of person who would faint easily. When, or if, she regained consciousness, he might get some information, but for now another lead had been halted, and another layer added to the mystery surrounding the Dolphin Hotel. He accompanied the police and ambulance crew back round to the front of the house. A small knot of bystanders had formed at the end of the driveway and were gazing with avid curiosity at the ambulance. Matt stayed behind and tagged along nonchalantly behind the police officer as Mrs. Craven was driven away. He would have liked to have questioned the onlookers to discover if any of them had seen or heard anything out of the ordinary that afternoon. Instead, he had to be content with trying to overhear anything useful from the questions the policeman was asking. He loitered for as long as possible, slipping in a few questions of his own in between answering the concerned inquiries of Mrs. Craven's neighbours and their staff. It appeared that no one had seen or heard anything, including the lady whose telephone he'd used to alert the authorities. Kitty was at the front reception desk when he returned to the hotel. She looked up as he entered the lobby, an eager expression in her eyes. "What did you find out?" she murmured as soon as he was in earshot. Matt glanced around the lobby. A family with two young children were having afternoon tea in the corner seats, and an elderly couple were browsing the tourist brochures in the rack by the elevator.
"We need to talk, but not here."
He kept his voice low as he leaned against the polished, dark oak counter. The sooner she knew what had happened, the better. Her forehead creased into a frown as she slid a small key across the countertop towards him.
"Meet me in Grams's salon, 2 minutes."
When Kitty arrived upstairs at her Grams's quarters, she found Matt standing at the window, staring out at the view of the river.
"One of the girls has taken over from me downstairs a while. Now, tell me how you got on this afternoon."
He turned to face her.
"Mrs. Craven wasn't able to tell me anything."
Kitty stared at him.
"You could have told me that in the lobby."
She folded her arms and tilted her chin upwards to glare at him.
"She couldn't tell me anything because when I got there, she was lying unconscious in the garden."
Her knees turned to cotton wool and she sank down onto the plush sofa.
"I don't understand."
Matt crossed the room to take the seat next to her. Kitty could barely take in the information as he told her about what he'd found on his visit to Mrs. Craven's home.
"Will she be all right? I mean, I don't like the woman, but I don't want anything bad to happen to her."
Her mind raced and the cup of tea she'd drunk earlier threatened to reappear. It would be too much of a coincidence for something to happen to Mrs. Craven just as she was about to speak to Matt. If it wasn't an accident, however, then someone had taken care that it shouldn't appear suspicious. She tried to suppress a shiver when she recalled her own near miss with the truck.
"I don't know. She's an elderly lady, even if she does appear to be as tough as old boots."
Matt raked his hand through his hair.
"It could just have been an accident, though, couldn't it?"
She knew she was grasping at straws. Her gut instinct told her loudly and clearly that someone had wanted to stop Mrs. Craven from talking. But who and why? And how had they known that Matt was going to see her today? The elderly woman had lived in the area all her life. What could she have possibly had to say now that she couldn't have said at any time in the past?
"Maybe if and when she comes around, we'll find out what happened. Truthfully, though, I don't think either of us believes she accidentally fell and banged her head."
His gaze locked with hers, and a chill ran down her spine.
"You think the incident with the truck was deliberate too, don't you?"
There, she'd said it. The look in his eyes supplied her answer.
"Did you find anything else out this afternoon?"
Her voice sounded scratchy and she coughed to try and restore it back to normal.
"I did some poking around the hotel and called in some favours from some friends to try and find out a bit more about your mysterious Mr. Smith."
"He's not my Mr. Smith, and I hate feeling that I'm suspicious about a guest who is probably a perfectly innocent holidaymaker."
Matt sighed.
"The problem seems to be that he isn't anyone's Mr. Smith.
Mr. Smith does not exist." Kitty frowned, not understanding quite what Matt meant.
"Of course he exists. We have an address for him and everything in the register."
Matt shook his head.
"I made some calls this afternoon. The address is real, but Mr. Smith doesn't live there. No one does. The house has been derelict and boarded up for the last 10 years.
She felt her jaw drop and closed her mouth with a snap.
"That's impossible."
Matt shrugged.
"We don't know, of course, if it's connected to the anonymous notes or to Mrs. Craven's fall."
"It has to be. Why else would someone come here with a fake address?"
She slumped back on the sofa. She felt more uncomfortable than ever now, knowing one of her guests had set out to deliberately deceive the hotel.
"It may be that he has other reasons for wanting to conceal his identity that aren't connected to what's been going on. But whatever his reasons, it's definitely suspicious."
"I don't think I'm going to sleep tonight with him staying here and knowing he isn't who he says he is,"
She worried at her lower lip with her teeth as she thought about it.
At least he doesn't know we're on to him, and we can keep a watch on his activities. Is he out at the moment?
Yes, he handed in his room key to the desk just before you got back.
Great, come on then.
Matt reached out his hand and tugged her to her feet.
Let's go and search his room.
She snatched her hand free. We can't do that. It wouldn't be ethical.
Matt grinned at her, the dimple in his cheek deepening. And you think it's all right for this man to register under a false name and address? And to possibly be a suspect for conking a defenseless old lady over the head? Suppose he does a runner without paying the bill? Or steals all your towels?
Kitty glared at him. She knew he was right, but the idea of searching a guest's room didn't sit well with her.
Fine, you win. What do we do if he comes back while we're in there, though? You're the boss. You'll think of something.
She could hear Matt humming to himself as he followed her along the winding corridor at the rear of the hotel, leading to Mr. Smith's room.
Will you stop that? You sound like a badly tuned bumblebee.
She pulled the bunch of master keys from her jacket pocket and unlocked the door.
Our friend is right at the end of the corridor here, Matt observed, looking around.
I think he asked for this room. Something about being a poor sleeper and needing a quiet room. This room has a private bathroom, too.
Kitty had forgotten that request until Matt had commented. This part of the floor was very quiet, and the rooms were cheaper, as the only view from the window was of the small rear garden, which backed onto the foot of the sandstone escarpment which started at that end of the hotel. Matt pushed past her and into the room. Kitty rubbed at her arms, trying to eliminate the goosebumps that had started up the instant she'd opened the door. Everything looked neat and tidy, the double bed turned down, no clutter on the polished rosewood nightstand. She glanced out of the sash window at the empty garden and the small wooden gate set into the cliff. It closed off the entrance to an old passageway that was rumoured to have been used to avoid the customs men back in the 17th century. Matt was busy, systematically searching carefully through the contents of her guest's drawers, giving her a running commentary as he searched. Underwear, navy socks, some pictures. Ugh, nothing in this one.
He moved to the bedside cabinet, checking the folder containing the hotel's complimentary stationery.
Oh, what's this?
To Kitty, it looked like a blank piece of paper. Matt folded it carefully and tucked it in his pocket.
Just going to check the bathroom.
Hurry up! You're making me nervous! Kitty hissed and checked the corridor once more.
Keep your hair on. You own the place, remember? You have a right to be here.
Chapter 7. Kitty glanced back along the corridor towards the elevator. The metal master keys were sweaty in her palm. Inside the room, she could hear Matt clanging around in the bathroom.
Matt, get a move on! Just checking on something.
More scraping and bumping sounds followed. Kitty's heart was beating so hard she thought she might be about to have a panic attack.
Ha!
Matt's triumphant exclamation diverted her attention.
What? Hang on, I'm coming out.
Matt appeared at her side, a boyishly triumphant grin plastered across his face.
Let's go.
He set off along the corridor. Kitty stifled a frustrated shriek as she locked the room door and hurried after him. She caught him up at the elevator.
Well, what did you find?
The elevator door chimed, and he pulled open the metal gate and stepped inside.
Wait and see.
He tapped the side of his nose, closed the gate, and pressed the button to take them down to the first floor. To add to her annoyance, he recommenced the tuneless humming that had driven her crazy in the corridor. Kitty was torn between wanting to deliver a sharp dig with her elbow to his ribs and not giving any sign that he was getting to her. She opted for the second option, folding her arms and pretending she couldn't see or hear him until they were inside her grandmother's suite. As soon as the door closed, Kitty pounced.
Okay, Inspector. What did you find?
Matt took a seat at the bureau and waited for her to unlock the lid, his solid frame strangely incongruous in the dainty gilt chair that her grandmother used each day when dealing with her correspondence.
I need a pencil.
He took out the sheet of paper he'd acquired in Mr. Smith's room and started hunting in the pen tray.
Exasperated, Kitty smacked his fingers away before selecting a pencil and handing it to him. For the last time, Matt, what did you find out?
Let's just see what's written on this first, and then I'll tell you. Matt quickly and carefully shaded over the sheet of headed paper, revealing the indented message that had been pressed in from the missing top sheet.
Good thing our man is heavy-handed.
Kitty peered over his shoulder to read.
Check out Lower Ferry Dock. Looks like he was giving someone some instructions.
That's not very surprising if he is a commercial traveller. He might be expecting some samples or something. Except that was where the body of the Dutchman had been found, floating in the water.
I also found several other very interesting items hidden in his bathroom. They were wrapped in oilskin and tucked inside the toilet cistern. I think you'll agree that isn't very innocent behaviour.
I don't understand. What did you find?
She felt sick.
That our Mr. Smith is also known as Mr. Delguardo, Mr. Avery, and Mr. Jones.
Realization dawned.
Fake passports?
Matt nodded, along with a large amount of banknotes.
We need to report this to the police. Matt, this is bad.
She sank down onto the sofa and pressed her hands into her lap in a bid to stop them from shaking.
It's like something from the cinema. Suppose he had something to do with that man who was killed.
Matt shifted his weight in the chair, causing it to creak in protest.
It's possible. A falling out amongst thieves, perhaps. I don't know if he's connected to the letters or what he's doing here.
You say he requested that particular room when he booked in?
She nodded. I noticed it when I checked the booking notes this afternoon. He requested that room and said he'd be staying until this Saturday, but that he might extend his stay if his business went on for longer than he thought. He paid up front in cash.
She shivered as she wondered what his business might be if it involved fake identities.
So far, he's not actually done anything illegal. Okay, so he has some fake passports and papers, but he hasn't tried to use them, at least not here. And if we hadn't been poking around inside his toilet cistern, we wouldn't have been any the wiser.
Matt picked up the pencil and drummed the tip against his teeth.
Kitty placed her head in her hands. She couldn't work out Matt's logic.
I'm scared, Matt. Who is this man? We need to go to the police. Clearly he doesn't have multiple fake passports hidden in a toilet cistern for any good purpose. Then there's the murder. It could have been him. He could be a murderer.
Okay, I know you're right. I just wish we could find out if the letters your grandmother received and our Mr. Smith have a connection. We'd better come up with an excuse for what I was doing looking in the toilet cistern, too.
What did make you look in there? Kitty asked.
It wasn't something she would have thought of doing, and she wondered what Matt had done before his arrival at the Dolphin.
Lucky hunch. Watched too many spy films when I was younger.
He moved his shoulders upwards in a nonchalant gesture. Before she could ask him anything else, he was on the telephone to the local police. Kitty decided she would ask her grandmother a few things about Matt during her next telephone call. He appeared very knowledgeable about some very strange subjects. Matt had seen the questions in Kitty's eyes and knew he hadn't fooled her. Fortunately, she was called away to the reception desk while he dealt with reporting their find to the police. He had to hope they wouldn't steam in mob-handed, otherwise Mr. Smith, or whatever his real name was, would clam up, or even worse, disappear. Kitty already appeared to be more concerned about the hotel's reputation and the possibility of spreading alarm to her other guests by having a patrol car and uniformed officers come to the Dolphin than what Mr. Smith might be up to. Fortunately, Mr. Smith was intercepted in a side street as he was returning that evening, so the police presence at the hotel was minimalized. Matt was kept busy providing a statement to say what he had found in the room, and Mr. Smith and his bogus documents were spirited away to the police station. Kitty tracked Matt down in the kitchen as soon as her shift on the reception desk had finished. He hurriedly finished off the last mouthful of the gammon and eggs that he'd persuaded the chef to cook for him. "Well?" She caught hold of his arm and tugged him into a nearby store cupboard, full of dried goods and mysterious jars. "What happened? What did the police say?" She kept her voice low so they wouldn't be overheard by the kitchen staff. "Who is Mr. Smith? Do you know if he's connected with the letters or the murder?" Questions tumbled from her lips faster than he could answer. "Whoa! They haven't said anything to me. They need to question the man first, and he might not tell them anything. Obviously, they are going to see if there's any connection between him and the Dutchman." Her grip tightened. "What if they let him out? We have all the rest of his clothes and things here. He still has his room. He could be very upset, and clearly he may be dangerous." Matt looked pointedly at where her hand had scrunched up the sleeve of his jacket. "Well, that's easily dealt with. Ask the maids to pack all his things into his case and lock it in one of the storerooms. If and when he needs to collect it, we can arrange for it to be dropped off. The chances are the police will want to go through his things anyway. He's not going to come back to the Dolphin." Kitty's grasp relaxed. "I'm just glad Grams isn't here. She'd be horrified by all of this. I don't know what I'm going to tell her about Mrs. Craven. She's going to be very upset. They've been friends for years." "I suggest not telling her anything just yet." Unbeknown to Kitty, he would brief her grandmother himself later. He extricated himself and rubbed his arm where she'd been holding on to him. She didn't appear to notice. "I called the hospital earlier too, but they wouldn't even tell me if Mrs. Craven was conscious." She wrapped her arms across her body as if suddenly chilly, even though the interior of the storeroom was warm and humid. Matt realized his mouth was dry, and he ran the tip of his tongue across his lips, trying to unglue them. The faint rose scent of her perfume teased his senses, and the pupils of her eyes were wide and dark with anxiety. A dull roaring noise started in his ears, and the air around him closed in, choking him. Perspiration trickled down his spine, and he had to use every inch of his iron self-control to stay on his feet. The walls of the storeroom appeared to move in towards him, and before he could stop himself, he pushed past Kitty and hurried out of the kitchen. He pushed his way past the ovens and out of the back door, before finishing up leaning against the wall next to the metal waste bins. He slumped against the brickwork and tried to gulp down the cooler outdoor air. He closed his eyes, trying to stop the dizziness that had taken over his body. "Matt? Matt, where are you? Are you okay?" He heard a woman's voice call from the direction of the doorway. He shook his head, trying to clear his mind of the images that had crowded into his head when he'd been in the storeroom. Images that sometimes haunted him in his sleep. That dreadful feeling of being suffocated and unable to breathe. "Matt?" Someone touched his arm. "Edith?" Her name slipped out before he could stop himself. The name he never said aloud anymore. "Who's Edith?" He opened his eyes to see Kitty standing next to him, her slender fingers touching his arm, concern and bewilderment etched into her delicate features. "Matt, what happened? You look terrible. Who's Edith?" He sucked in another breath and straightened himself back up.
"Nothing. Nothing, it's all right. I just felt a little dizzy. Confined spaces."
He could tell from the frown on her forehead and the look in her eyes that she wasn't buying into his lame excuse. Why had he mentioned his wife's name?
Let's go for a walk. You look as if you could use some fresher air.
She wrinkled her small nose in the direction of the bins, and he allowed her to steer him round the side of the hotel towards the river. As they rounded the side of the building, the breeze from the water cooled his skin, and his heart began to settle back into its normal rhythm.
Look, I'm fine, really. I just can't be in enclosed spaces.
He paused as they neared the locked side gate.
Truly, I just needed to get some fresh air.
Something that sounded like a snort came from Kitty as she pulled out the master keys and selected the one for the padlock.
Yeah, right.
He watched as she undid the lock.
Oh.
She sighed as she pulled the key free.
What's that?
He caught hold of her hand so he could take a closer look.
Looks like oil, all over my fingers. I guess Mickey must have greased the lock.
Kitty shrugged and pulled out a handkerchief to clean her hand.
Who uses this gate?
Not many people. All the deliveries come around the other side through the vehicle entrance. This gate is really just an emergency and alternative route.
He followed her through to the other side and snapped the padlock closed shut again behind them.
I'll check with Mickey tomorrow to see if he has done anything to the padlock recently, and I think a new lock might be in order.
Matt fell into step beside her as they made their way to the paved path running along the embankment next to the river.
He matched his longer stride to her shorter steps as the wind ruffled his hair and cooled his skin.
I'm sorry about earlier. I'm not good in confined spaces.
She halted at the short stretch of railings near the upper ferry stop.
I gathered.
She leaned her arms on the rails and looked out across the water. Matt copied her actions, watching as a boat rowed by six oarsmen skimmed lightly over the river surface.
It's a bit of a hangover from the war. Sometimes it takes me by surprise.
The war affected so many people. I suppose we all forget as time moves on and memories fade.
It's so peaceful here now this evening. It's hard to believe that there's all this madness going on. Threatening anonymous letters, fake passports, murder, and old ladies being bashed over the head.
Kitty's voice wobbled.
We need to look for more clues.
The police might tell us something once they uncover Mr. Smith's real identity. Then we can try and see if he's connected with the letters or what happened to Mrs. Craven. And, of course, if Mrs. Craven regains consciousness, she might be able to tell us what happened.
Maybe.
Kitty picked at a piece of paint flaking off the railing.
Perhaps the key to all this really is back in the past. Something to do with what happened in the war. What do you think, Matt? Is it connected to my mother's disappearance back then?
Chapter 8. There was a moment's silence before Matt replied.
Honestly, I don't know if it's connected to your mother's disappearance. I believe it's what your grandmother may think.
Kitty stared at the river and watched as the rowing boat began to battle its way back upstream against the current.
Gram spent a lot of time and money looking for my mother. She placed advertisements in the newspapers, offered a reward for information. All the trails and leads we had were dead ends. Every now and again there would be something that would give us fresh hope, but...
Her voice tailed away as she blinked back the tears that threatened to escape down her cheeks. Before your grandmother left for Scotland, she said the last investigator she hired claimed to have found some kind of proof that your mother was dead.
Matt's tone was gentle.
Kitty fumbled in her pocket for her handkerchief.
There wasn't any proof as such, but he said we needed to accept that it was the most likely outcome from all the leads he'd followed up. I think it was more the absence of any evidence of her being still alive. When she went missing, the war was on,
There was bombing. People were moving about. They know she bought a ticket to London, but think she left the train earlier. Something must have made her change her plans. There were letters from people who claimed to have seen her in all kinds of places. But nothing could be substantiated.
She folded the cloth to avoid the oil from earlier and patted the skin dry under her eyes, trying not to make her eyes red.
Do you have copies of all the searches?
She nodded.
Of course. They began when I was very young. My mother wasn't... Well, she wasn't very conventional. She was involved in the women's suffrage movement. She had travelled a lot, kept company with actors and musicians, arty people. She was quite talented herself, I think. That's why Mrs. Craven and some of the other old biddies didn't like her. It didn't help that my father couldn't be found, although Grams didn't really look for him. She said he was something of a rogue.
Kitty tucked the handkerchief back in her pocket. The files are stored in the hotel safe. Come on.